The letter to Congress and to the Pentagon this week bore the signatures of an unusually broad array of defense thinkers, 25 well-known experts in all, from 10 different think tanks, ranging from the libertarian Cato Institute to the liberal Center for American Progress to the conservative American Enterprise Institute, and plenty of others in between. All say it's urgent for Congress and DOD to begin tackling costs in three specific areas: military bases, civilian personnel, and military pay and benefits. As Gordon Adams, a distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center, points out, they're all areas that Congress thus far has been unwilling to address.
This is extremely hard stuff to do. If we don't do it, doing what we should be doing, which is thinking about the right size of the force, the right deployment of the force, and the right equipping of the force, gets really hard to do. CSIS, I've been involved with their study for the last year and a half. What we're finding in that study is if we continue on the track that we're on in these areas, the funding available for forces and the funding available for procurement essentially dry up by the end of this decade. You will have nothing in place unless you grapple with these issues. They are hard, and we need to grapple with them.
Adams spoke to Capitol Hill staffers yesterday alongside six other signatories to the letter. The experts don't agree in every case on exactly how to grapple with those issues, but they're adamant that with a relatively steep drawdown in defense spending now in progress, Congress can no longer ignore them. On military bases, Michael O'Hanlon of the Brookings Institution says there's a lot of merit behind the Pentagon's request for another round of base realignments and closures in 2015.
We still have about 20% excess capacity in our military infrastructure in the United States, according to the Department of Defense's own calculations and assessments of what you need to train, equip, and prepare a modern military force. That's considered to be a fact by, frankly, everyone I know in the debate. Why would you keep it? And also, why would you keep operating it? Even if you want to keep some of the property in, let's say, relatively remote areas as a hedge against the possible need to increase the size of the force in an uncertain future world, you don't need to operate those bases today.
But virtually no one in Congress has stepped forward to endorse another BRAC. As recently as 2 weeks ago, a key House subcommittee voted to explicitly prohibit the department from planning for any stateside base closures. Lawmakers generally argue that another BRAC would impose too many upfront costs and that DOD should focus on closing overseas bases. Mackenzie Eaglin of the American Enterprise Institute finds that suggestion laughable.
Congress is purposely ignoring the fact that the Defense Department has been rapidly shedding and consolidating bases overseas for the last 20 years. It's a nice, convenient thing. It plays well back home. Oh, shut those overseas bases and I'll protect you here at home base X. But it's incredibly destructive because it's ignoring reality. You can't cut end strength, particularly active duty end strength, and ignore the physical assets where those people would have slept, trained, or eaten. So the Army's on a path to shrink 14% from its peak in the last decade. The Marine Corps is going to fall by 12%. The Navy has already shrunk by 11% since 2005, and the Air Force has dropped by almost 10%. But we're going to shrink capacity by zero? That's obviously not a logical solution and smart way to save money.
With regard to the civilian workforce, the experts don't make any prescriptions for reducing costs, but they do point out that it's grown at a rate that's five times greater than the increase in uniform personnel over the past decade. They also fault the Pentagon for failing to do a thoughtful analysis of the right mix of military, civilian, and contractor employees to perform the work of the Defense Department. For instance, in the case of contractors, says David Berteau of the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the Pentagon still doesn't know how many workers it's actually paying. He says the civilian workforce should be reduced, but in a careful, targeted way.
What we've learned from the last drawdown, where we cut 200,000 plus civilians out of the Defense Department, is the work didn't change, and so some other way was found to do the work. When you get rid of civilians, what are your choices? Either the military does it, they're the most expensive way to undertake almost any task, or you hire contractors. Contractors is fine as long as, in fact, it's for surge capacity, which you then reduce. But what we've seen over the last almost 20 years now is you build it up, but you never draw it back down. Similarly, in the aughts, when we built up the defense budget tremendously, we only added about 4% military personnel, tremendous additional increase in civilian personnel, and by some measures as much as 60%, and by contractors doubling. So managing the entire workforce is an important part of the process, if you will.
The authors say DOD already has more civilians than it can afford, which is why most of them are being furloughed this year. But that's a temporary measure. In 2014, DOD will still have the same number of people on its payroll payroll. Virtually no one expects the Pentagon's budget to increase next year, so the workforce will have to shrink. As part of that process, Berto says it's essential that DOD decide to do less with less.
Find the things we can stop doing. We have a long list that's implicit in our letter. If all you do is cut people without cutting work, then, in fact, all you're doing is making everybody's job harder. You're going to see this with furloughs over the next few months, where the amount of work hasn't disappeared at all. The amount of time available to do the work will go down over an 11-week period in the Defense Department by 20%. And all that means is everybody else has to do the same amount of work in less time.
The third and arguably most politically difficult on the think tank's list of cost-cutting priorities is military compensation, a system that dates to the 1970s and has been almost unchanged since then, except for the addition of more benefits. The authors argue the system is outdated and hasn't kept pace with the forms of compensation a 21st century workforce cares about. But Larry Korb of the Center for American Progress also acknowledges any proposed changes will meet with fierce resistance from military retiree groups.
Dealing with military pay and compensation is much more emotional than rational. They'll say, well, you're breaking promises. How much can you pay a man or woman to risk their life? There's no answer to that, okay? We have a standard. It's called ECI. You go above it, you come back. That's not breaking, any promises. You want to have co-pays for TRICARE for life or a deductible? Breaking a promise didn't exist till 2001. And let me tell you this. When you look at the personnel costs in there, remember that you're not paying the full cost of retirement. That doesn't go in the defense budget. You get the accrual basis, which is roughly about $20 billion, 75 that's coming out of the Treasury.
Todd Harrison of the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessment says there's a way for DOD to defuse the politics behind military pay and benefits. He says the department should gather data from actual military members to determine which benefits they value versus how much they cost to provide. He estimates overall military compensation costs have grown by 56% over the past decade. In the case of healthcare spending, it's 110%. But he says simply cutting back on existing programs is the wrong approach.
Compensation is the primary tool by which we can induce people to volunteer and serve in the military. You don't want to use a lawnmower approach and whatever grows the fastest sticks out and gets whacked. I think we've got to change this debate and we've got to ask a different question. It's not about how to cut costs. It's how we can get better value for each dollar that we spend. That's what we've got to be looking at. And some of the forms of compensation, I would argue, service members don't value them commensurate with what they're costing the military to provide. All of the reforms, not just compensation reform, get rid of excess bases and infrastructure, reshaping and resizing the DOD civilian workforce, these aren't strategic choices. These are just good management practices. We want to have these reforms so we can actually get to the real debate, the real strategic choices about what kind of military capabilities we should have, what kind of force structure we should have, what the proper level of defense spending is. Those are the kind of debates we should be having, but until we get to these reforms, none of those things really matter.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.